Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Captain Azan stood in the viewing room, Professor Shaw beside him. His respiration was heavy, a light sweat misting his brow. Behind him stood a group of men, their faces half buried in shadow. Azan had no idea why he had been told to report to the facility. He did know one thing. Every man in the room was afraid. The air reeked of fear. Fear and desperation. "Please bring him in," the professor spoke into the two-way monitor, his tie dangling like a hangman's noose. On the other side of the glass, a metal door hissed open, and two men, dressed head to toe in hazmat gear, dragged in a screaming man who they unceremoniously threw to the ground before beating a hasty retreat, the door locking in place behind them. Their captive immediately sprang to his feet, foam dripping from his lips as he continued to scream and hammer at the walls, tearing his fingernails and leaving trails of oozing blood. At last he noticed the two-way mirror and, howling, launched himself forward, his eyes wild as he smashed his head into the hardened glass, over and over again, leaving blood and bits of tattered scalp behind.
"Jesus," Azan gasped, taking a step backwards. "What is it, some kind of rabies?"
Shaw ignored the question.
"Don't worry, Captain. He'll grow still soon. If my calculations are correct, his time's almost up." It was as if the professor's words had been some kind of prophecy. The raging man suddenly became still. His bloodshot eyes started to bulge, blood beginning to pour from his nose and ears. He let out an ear-piercing shriek of pain, his hands going to his bulging stomach as it suddenly began to grow and distend, tearing through the tattered remains of his blood-soaked clothes like some malignant pregnancy.
"Here it comes," Shaw said, his breath quickening.
Steaming up the glass, beetles poured forth from the twitching corpse, cascading over and feeding upon his ruined flesh. The screeching man's stomach exploded in a welter of blood and gore as thousands of crimson beetles poured forth from the twitching corpse, cascading over him, feeding upon his ruined flesh.
"What the fuck?" Azan gasped. "What the hell is going on here?"
Shaw ignored him and spoke into the monitor once again.
"Begin the cleansing, please."
Instantly, the overhead sprinklers shuddered to life. A spark was set and the entire room exploded into flames. The men behind Shaw began to mutter frantically, gesturing towards their clipboards and comparing notes. Turning towards Azan, Shaw gently took his arm and led him into a nearby conference room. "Be seated, please," he said, turning on a nearby projector. The thing hummed to life, showing a petri dish filled with a coarse reddish-looking sand. "This is a sample of Martian soil," Shaw began.
"Hold on a damn minute," Azan interrupted, shocked.
"How the hell did you get that?"
Shaw sighed, somewhat wearily.
"My dear Captain, this will take a long time to explain if you keep interrupting. A lot of what we do here is classified, and you and your men are on a need-to-know basis. All I can tell you, I shall, but if some things are left out of the conversation, it is because, let me guess." Azan smiled thinly, classified. "How astute you are, Captain. Now may I please continue?"
"Sure. Sure, world doc. Go on ahead."
Shaw, somewhat mollified, continued. "This sample has been with us for some time, but it's been held in stasis while we went about examining the other four samples." Azan was tempted to ask the obvious question, but decided against it. The professor was about as jumpy as a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs. Besides, Azan had learned long ago that you could learn more by keeping silent than you could with a multitude of questions. "The first samples gave us nothing, completely devoid of life. But the fifth sample must have contained something even our most advanced equipment couldn't have managed to locate. We now believe it was some kind of spore or parasite. I can assure you, Captain," he said, wiping a trembling hand on the side of his face, "every precaution was taken, yet still, somehow, This thing managed to infect one of our scientists. One of our top people, in fact. David's death was a great loss, not only to us, but to all of humanity.
David, Azan pushed gently.
Yes, Shaw replied. Dr. David Peters. After examining the sample, he fell ill. Of course, this rang alarm bells, and he was immediately quarantined. He and most of his assistants, unfortunately one of them, managed to escape the base. But we'll discuss him in a moment. Poor David had collapsed, and he had a kind of sudden fever. He was only out for a few hours, but when he awoke, he was a madman. Wild, incredibly strong, as only a true maniac can be. But that wasn't the worst of it. He began to attack people, biting them, tearing at their flesh, swallowing it down. Finally, we managed to restrain him and get him locked away in a padded cell. But soon after it happened, the very same thing you saw today. Again, he hit the projector button, and another slide whirled into place, showing an insectoid-like creature flayed open and pinned to a white plastic board, surrounded by its own black, viscous-looking blood. Azan wasn't quite sure what he was seeing. The thing, in some ways, looked arachnid in nature, but had a hard exoskeleton shell. It seemed more mouth than anything else, with large, piercing-like mandibles, and a multitude of small, black, shining eyes that were dotted around in random parts of its body. All he knew was that this thing was alien in nature, and unlike anything he had ever seen before. "We managed to contain the first outbreak," Shaw said, never taking his eyes off the creature. "What about the others?" Azan broke in. "Ah, well, there's the rub," Shaw smiled sickly. "Initially, four other members of staff were infected, all of those who assisted David that day. After we destroyed the second swarm that..." He swallowed hard. "Manifested from the second host, things suddenly began to change."
"How so?"
Azan asked, leaning closer. "The third victim," he said, checking his notes, "one Christine Cumberland, her gestation period took much longer. You can see the damn things straining to get out, but they wouldn't emerge. When at last they did, we killed them immediately, but the fourth victim took even longer. It was as if the damn things knew we were waiting for them. And when they finally did emerge, they didn't bother feeding on their host, but tried to scatter, scurrying up the walls, across the floor, ceiling, as if seeking a way out."
Azan finished the sentence.
"Yes. Just so." Shaw sighed, rubbing his temple.
"You think they have intelligence, don't you, Shaw?"
"Yeah," the professor replied, sitting upright and adjusting his glasses. "Yeah, I do. Can't be sure, but I'm beginning to believe it's some kind of hive mind. But there is more." And once again, he hit the projection button, and another slide slotted into place. It was the same creature, only now much bigger, with fewer legs and eyes. "They keep changing with every brood. They seem to be adapting. The first one we caught and dissected. We couldn't make head nor tail of its anatomy. Completely alien. By the third hatching, the things had already developed a set of lungs, as if they were trying to adapt more fully to the atmosphere, to become more like us."
"Sweet Jesus,"
Azan said, dragging his eyes away from the creature on the screen.
"And you said one of these things, one of the hosts, managed to get off the base?"
"Yes, before we knew of the infection," Shaw added quickly.
"And do you have him?"
"Yes. It was the man you witnessed die in the other room."
"Thank God for that,"
Azan said, slumping in his chair. "No, you misunderstood, Captain," Shaw replied. "He managed to make it all the way home. And thankfully, it's not very far, a small village just a few miles down the road, but the whole village is now quarantined. That's why you and your team have been brought here. You've been assigned to my command by the Ministry of Defense, and I shall be your liaison on the matter." From under his lab coat, he produced a sealed document. Azan took it and cracked it open, his mouth agape.
"You're going to wipe it out, aren't you? The whole village."
"Not me, Captain. You. You and your men are going to exterminate every man, woman, and child in that place."
"And what if they're not infected?" Azan shot back.
"Tell me, Captain. Is that a risk you're willing to take?"
Oh.
Less than an hour later, Azan and the 2nd Battalion SAS were geared up and flying towards the village of Evershore. Professor Shaw sat beside him, looking a little green around the gills as the chopper was hit by strong autumn winds. 5 minutes later, Azan got his first look at Evershore. He could hardly believe what he was seeing. The entire village had been surrounded by steel makeshift walls, topped with vicious-looking razor wire. Hastily erected scaffold towers strategically placed around the wall looked down into the village. On the ground, regular army troops ran to and fro, and it seemed a whole sea of camouflaged tents filled a nearby field.
Jesus,
Azan turned to Shaw. All this in less than 48 hours.
You have the full backing and might of the UK government behind us,
Shaw yelled above the whirring rotors as the chopper touched down. Even in all his years in the SAS, Azan had never seen anything like this. Still, he had a job to do and leapt in the chopper, his man hot on his heels. He was immediately met by a grim-faced man. He wore no rank or insignia, but had the air of a military man all the same.
Captain Azan, I presume,
he said, offering up his hand. Azan took it. It was pumped hard once and then dropped. The other man never gave his name.
Dr. Shaw,
he said, nodding to the professor, who now stood by Azan's side.
Please follow me, gentlemen. I'll give you a quick stirrup.
The two men followed him into a nearby tent.
I'm afraid it's like you suspected, the big man said to Shaw. Village is infected. Those little bastards were hiding inside those people all along. No sign of any aggressive behavior till we started putting up the walls. That's when they attacked. We managed to force them back using flamethrowers. Most of them seem to be at the Romero stage right now.
The Romero stage? Azan asked.
You know, the other man replied. Grade A Night of the Living Dead. It was a joke made up by my men. Guess it's their own way of relieving the tension. Besides, those fucking things act like zombies trying to eat people and all.
So have you seen any signs of the Beatles yet?
Shaw asked.
No, not yet, the grim-faced man replied. In fact, after the first attack, they retreated back into their homes. But they're up to something. Feel it in my bones.
I don't understand this, Azan said, turning to Shaw.
Why don't they just swarm and escape? Even with that wall in place, they could surely find a way out.
I don't know, Shaw replied. We aren't even sure how the infection spreads. Maybe through a bite? Maybe the damn thing breathes out more spores.
We have measures in place, the big man said, in case they do swarm. Did you notice the trench dug around the base of the wall?
Can't say I did, Azan admitted, cursing himself. The whole thing had him shook up.
Well, it's there, filled with a certain jelly somewhat akin to napalm. If one, just one of those things tries to get out, boom, the whole fucking trench goes.
And you think they know this? Azan asked.
I don't know much about how smart these things are. That's down to the dock, he said, nodding to Shaw.
Jesus Christ, Azan said, throwing up his arms. If we know fire kills these damn things, why don't we just send in a whole bunch of hellfire missiles, blow the place off the face of the earth?
Be kind of hard to cover that up, the man said. Right now, we're just about managing to keep it out of the press and offline. We have a cover story in place. But first, we gotta get rid of any evidence, and you and your team have been picked up for cleanup duty. So saddle up, Captain. You're going in.
Azan had less than an hour to brief his men and get them geared up. The village was somewhat larger than Azan had first thought. Nestled in a small valley, it consisted of a main street with numerous other houses dotted on both sides of the gently sloping hills. Population at last census, just a little over 500 people. Azan and his crew, along with Doc Shaw, were airlifted in by helicopter, which landed on a nearby school playing field. He had a team of 20 elite men dressed head to toe in NBC gear, respirators and all. Half the squad carried compact but deadly flamethrowers across their backs, the rest an assortment of automatic rifles loaded with a mix of high explosive and full metal jacket tracer rounds.
Okay,
Azan said as the heli dusted off.
Radio check. Everybody copy.
Each member of the squad answered affirmative, their voices sounding almost metallic in Azan's headset. Switching over to Channel 1, he addressed Shaw.
Okay, Doc, he said, turning his face to the man. We're on Channel 1, which is a secure channel. The rest of the men are on Channel 2. High Command is on 3. I'll let you deal with them. You relay orders to me from Command, I give it over to them. Do you copy?
Yes.
I copy,
Shaw replied.
Please repeat standing orders and any changes of protocol, Azan continued. Shaw sighed. Standing orders are the same as before. Secure the town, wipe out all infected, which is, in this case, the entire town.
Roger that, Shaw said, turning away.
Quickly, he flicked over to Channel 2. Okay, boys, he addressed the men. This happy asshole says we have to wipe out everyone in this goddamn village. But that's not how we roll. The men murmured their agreement. So this is how we're gonna play this thing. Anyone showing signs of infection or aggressive behavior, we put them down. Any other civilians, we round them up, take them to the extraction zone. After that, whatever these government assholes want to do with them is up to them. But I won't stain my hands or the regiment's reputation with innocent blood. We clear? The men all clicked their radios twice in acknowledgement. Okay then, Azan said, slinging his rifle. Let's move. The village was in shambles. It seemed every window was smashed, the pavement littered with glass that crunched under their booted feet. A few cars had been burnt out, ruined shells still smoldering in the growing wind. Looks like we missed the party, Captain, the man at Azan's side said. It was Azan's second-in-command, Sergeant Michaels, a big, tough man that Azan had served with many times before. Just then, another voice came over the comms.
Got a body here, Captain.
Azan quickly looked around and saw one of his men nearly in the entrance of a nearby lobby. Hold position, he said to the rest before hurrying across.
Sweet Jesus, Azan sighed, seeing the state of the body, which was nothing more than a bloody skeleton in torn, tattered rags, the jaw hanging open as if in some kind of eternal scream.
Azan turned to Shaw and signaled him across.
What do you think, Doc?
He said, switching to his channel.
Completely devoured, Shaw replied, his voice dispassionate. Which means they're starting to swarm. We need to end this. End it real fast.
Okay,
Azan said, addressing the men.
We're splitting up into four teams. Alpha Team, take the west. Bravo, east. Charlie, south. Sergeant Michaels, myself, Trooper Kane, and the Doc will check the north part of the village. I want a building-by-building search. Now move.
The men quickly assembled themselves in four-man teams and then hurried away. The attack came, only a few moments later. Azan and his men had been searching a nearby post office on Main Street when Trooper Kane, who had been guarding the doorway, suddenly opened fire. Azan spun around, cocking his rifle, and ran for the door. From across the street, a horde of men, women, and children, their stomachs horribly distended, blood pouring from their eyes, ears, and mouths as they gnawed and chomped at the air. Every time one of them was hit, they would fall to the floor, their stomachs bursting open, thousands of beetles issuing forth, swarming towards the four men.
Flamethrower!
Azan screamed in the mic. Sergeant Michaels raced to the front, pushing Keen aside as he sprayed the oncoming horde with fiery liquid death. Nearby, Azan smashed out a window and began firing into the now-retreated horde, cutting them down so the flamethrower could continue its grisly work. At last, it was done. But now his comms were alive with the sound of panicked voices and the sporadic sound of gunfire. Soon those sounds turned to the screams of anguish and dread, and then, even more terrible, only the sound of a dead silence.
Bravo team, report! Alpha, come in!
Azan cried desperately into the mic, but there was nothing.
Anyone, report!
They're gone, Captain, Michael said, shaking his head sadly. They're all gone.
From the corner of his eye, Azan saw Shaw suddenly tear his respirator from his face as he began to laugh hysterically.
Doc,
Azan said, grabbing the man roughly by the shoulders. What the hell's wrong with you?
No orders, I'm afraid, he said, tapping at his earpiece.
Looks like your suggestion to High Command has been taken very seriously. They're going to wipe this place off the face of the earth.
What?
Azan gasped.
Why? Isn't it obvious?
Shaw spat at him.
No longer any need for a cover-up. They must have had another outbreak somewhere else. Now this is about cleaning up the goddamn mess. Fuck! How long do we have? We need to get the hell out of here.
Again, Shaw laughed.
You don't get it. They won't let us out. They won't risk further infection. It's all about damage control.
Suddenly, Shaw pulled his firearm.
I won't go out like that. I'm not going to burn like one of these goddamn things out here. Shaw, no!
Azan screamed, lunging for him, but it was already too late. Shaw put the gun to his head and pulled the trigger, spattering his brains all over the wall, his body hitting the floor like a sack of meat.
Mother of God. What do we do now?
K
Keen began to babble. Azan ignored him and switched his radio to Channel 3.
Come in, Command. This is Delta Team requesting extraction. I repeat, this is Delta Team requesting immediate extraction.
But there was only static. Nothing.
Azan cursed, tearing the respirator from his face. Not a goddamn thing.
So how do we get out? Keen said, his face white, his voice strained.
With this, Michael said, not waiting for Azan to reply. From his pack, he took out a block of C4 and a small detonator.
Azan began to smile.
I don't remember telling you to bring explosives with you, Sergeant.
He who dares wins, the sergeant said, returning Azan's grin with one of his own.
I think that school we just passed should give us plenty of cover from the assholes on the tower. We should prime it, lay it on the wall, boom, we're out of the shithole.
All right, gentlemen, Azan said, leaping to his feet.
Grab your shit, we're leaving.
Quickly, they made their way back to the school, encountering no infected as they hurried on. Once they got there, they scaled the fence, kept close to the side of the building. It was getting dark now, the shadows growing longer, giving them perfect cover as they turned a corner, the looming walls above them.
Look, Keen said, pointing towards one of the skeletal-like towers. It's empty. They must have all left.
Which means whatever's coming is coming soon.
Work fast, Sergeant,
Azan replied.
And just then, from behind them, came a terrified scream. Azan span around as the scream came again from the nearby window inside the school.
Sounds like a kid, Keen said, licking his lips nervously.
Yeah.
Azan said, yeah.
Sergeant, give me that flamethrower. The hell are you talking about? The sergeant replied. You ain't thinking of going in there. No time for debate, Azan snapped at him. Give me the flamethrower, Sergeant. That's an order.
The sergeant did as he bid.
Azan quickly strapped it on. Blow that wall, Sergeant. Get the hell out of here.
That said, he turned from the other man and boosted himself through the window, landing heavily inside. He was in a long corridor, classrooms on either side of him. Everywhere he looked, it seemed like strange shadows, scrawling and undulating across the walls, the air heavy with the scent of his own fear.
He was just rounding a corner when one of the infected leapt from the shadows, spattering him with hot, diseased foam as it chomped and lunged for his throat. With a cry, Azan managed to get an arm up under its chin, forcing the creature backwards. His free hand scrambled for his knife, which he drew from its sheath and thrust it again and again into the creature's side. Blood erupted from its mouth, spattering the inside of Azan's neck and face. The hot smell of copper filled the air. With one last Herculean effort, he shoved the creature backwards, freeing himself from its terrible embrace before thrusting the knife deep into the howling creature's eye socket, obliterating the diseased mind within. Another scream rang out, this one even more desperate. Azan, fighting off exhaustion, came on the run, checking each classroom frantically until at last
he came upon her.
A little girl sat huddled on top of a high metal cabinet, the floor around her swarming with crimson beetles. The girl saw him, her eyes widening in surprise, but Azan ignored her and opened up on the squirming mass, screaming in fear and outrage as he burned the writhing horde.
At last they lay still.
And Azan leapt across the dying flames, scooping up the little girl in his arms as he ran from the classroom and down the shadow-shrouded halls. Moments later, there came an explosion, and Azan smiled, knowing his men had escaped.
They're at the window now.
The terrified girl sobbing in his arms.
Easy. Easy, he said, helping her through the window and following after.
He was just about to grab her up when the whole world exploded behind with a deafening roar. It scooped him up, a hot fist ramming into his back, throwing him forward through the hole in the wall and smashing him into the ground. There was a sudden pain like nothing he'd ever known,
and he passed into oblivion. He awoke sometime later, covered in dust and bits of loose rubble, his skin tight and tender. He tried to sit up, but was only able to move his head from side to side. That's when he saw them. What was left of them, anyway. Trooper Keen and Sergeant Michaels, both of them no more than bloody skeletons, the flesh ripped from their bones. Only the tattered remains of their uniforms identifying who they had once been. And just then a face loomed above him. It was the girl, the little girl that he had rescued, seemingly untouched by the terrible explosion. She grinned down at him, her mouth growing impossibly wide, her eyes black and soulless.
This world is ours now, she crooned,
and Professor Shaw's words blazed across Azan's mind.
With every spawning, they change, adapt. It's like they're becoming more like us.
So fresh, the thing above him tittered. This world, so full of life. So much to consume. So much to devour.
She was changing now, beginning to writhe and twist until her entire body collapsed into 1,000 squirming beetles. They swarmed over Azan, tearing at his flesh as he howled into the night. A death cry that would signal the end of all civilization.
Hey there, kids, it's me, Mr. Creepypasta, and I want to tell you thanks so much for watching tonight's video or listening to tonight's episode of the podcast. Before I tell you all goodnight, I just want to remind you that there is tea available. It hasn't been available for quite a while, but now my wife's tea shop, the Ivory Monocle Tea, has become available once again. If you guys have been missing out on tea, or if you've missed out over the holidays, over these crazy, crazy months for me and my family, well, now's your time to get more tea. Head over to Etsy.com/shop/IvoryMonocleTea, and you can get your hands on tea from my wife. It's perfect if you guys happen to be living through this winter storm. It's freezing outside, all the trees are frozen over with ice for me, so tea is wonderful this time of year. And hopefully it's wonderful for you once the allergies get started. And as always, I would love to give a big thank you to everyone who's supporting me over on Patreon. You guys are the real MVPs, you guys keep things going, especially while things have been nuts for me over the past couple of months, and things have been getting crazier and crazier as time goes on. You guys are the ones who are keeping me sane, and I mean that with all sincerity, that you guys have helped me immensely. So, in my personal life and my professional life, I want to give a very big thank you to Jordan Alexander Sanchez, Jacob Fensky, Chance Burnett, Diana Krauss, Lakeda Canizales, Mr. B. Poster Pettis Pleaser, Gavis, Joseph Calarudo, Woody B., Dante Kincaid, Foxhound 803, Mephistopheles, Curse Pox Primark, Bastion Beefcake, Jeff the Killer's Cultist, Love You MMM, Insanity Gamer X, Jesus Corneo, Yargul, Amber Clark, Jay Kearns, Himbo Jerry, Sama High, Crusader Chocobo, Adam Arias, Captain Scurvy, Escadine, Braden Morris, Nate Cull, Our Min Sect Time, Angelus, Seclude, That Creepy Chick, Red Shadow Cat, Xavier and Cheyenne, Six Gay Rats and a Trench Coat, Turtle Man, Cryolinian, Lord Life's Best, Goring Trimagazy, Mr. Marcus Blitz, Ike Limchok, Dirt Diver 030, Matt Bach, Voice of Sand, Shelly J, Fikamel, Deleted Account, Melted Lake, Tully Sue, William King, Sashi Sazaku, Stricken, Freddy Krueger, Happy Birthday, Jason Wilson, Lisa Cottrell, Caspian, Hades Nephew, Tater Chip, Acid System, Mog, Kiri the Sloth, Fester's Lampshade, Nico Kyle, The Ginger Bros, and Stormcrow, Daniel Paulson, and Corey Kenshin. To everyone on this list, everyone in the description, and of course anyone who could support even just $1, thank you all so much for making my life significantly easier with this. And if you guys would like to be able to join any of the names that you see here or down there or anything at all, head over to patreon.com/MrCreepyPasta. And with that, I wish you all a very, very pleasant night and sweet dreams.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.